another edition of Conversations with Community Managers. I'm Shannon Abram with the Community Roundtable. Today, we are hosting a special State of Community Management 2019 episode featuring Rachel Happy from the Community Roundtable and Jeff Ross from Humana. Hi, Rachel. Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
Hello.
Rachel, I would love if you could get us started by giving just a super quick 30,000-foot elevator view of what the state of community management is.
Yes. Thank you, Shannon. And this year is our 10th edition of the State of Community Management. So this is annual research that we do to articulate the latest understanding of how communities operate within organizational contexts. And mostly they're online communities, but there's been a shift in recent years of really integrating the online and the offline. So in our view, all organizations are an ecosystem of communities. And so one of the approaches that has really gotten a lot of traction in the last 5 or 6 years is enterprise social networks that really enable communication to happen amongst those communities. And part of the reason we invited Jeff here is he was a member of our working group this year who really helped us inform what we were asking about in the research and how we analyzed the research. But Jeff has also been running an enterprise social networking program for many years. He's one of the older implementations of that. And so he's got just a wealth of experience around how to engage, what engagement means in certain contexts, and how that's all evolved. So I'm really looking forward to this conversation. And welcome, Jeff.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Why don't we kick off with kind of how you think about engagement? Like, what is engagement and what part of engagement is meaningful to you? How do you think about it?
Well, we have measured it in our internal community for a number of years with a fairly strict and narrow definition. When I report on engagement, I'm reporting on those who actually contribute in our internal community called Buzz by posting something. And so we look at those metrics monthly and quarterly. We actually report them out quarterly. And we divvy it up into the overall population as a whole, and then we separate out the people leaders as well to separately track the leader engagement there. I think at a broader level, most of the organization probably perceives engagement more broadly than that. We have a lot of culture and engagement professionals scattered around the organization in different segments of the business. And so when they're looking at engagement, they're looking at participation more holistically, I guess, from the individual in other things that happen, other in-person events, volunteerism efforts that happen, and the community aspect online and Buzz is one piece of that, and they are all mindful of that, and they include that in their goals, and then I consult with them regularly about helping them increase their engagement from the Buzz perspective. So it's not just logging in and browsing around. We don't consider that engagement.
Interesting. And it's interesting to me because I think I've kind of had an issue with the term engagement. I have a love-hate relationship with the word because so many people think of it in so many different ways. So I appreciate that you really started off the bat with kind of your more narrow definition because it allows you to measure it.
Right.
If you say, well, what's engagement? And that could be anything, really. People come to work every day. They're engaged at some level. Because they showed up, but is that meaningful? And then there's on the HR side, a lot of people define it simply as a psychological state. And I really think that psychological state drives behaviors. So if you look at behaviors, you can make some very strong inferences to their psychological state.
So right, and our HR will have an annual associate engagement survey, you know, that's coming up here soon for us in the next few weeks, and they'll have their own, you know, sets of questions there that measure a variety of things, and none of those questions specifically will deal with our online community, but there will be other opportunities and other regular reporting mechanisms in place that do include their participation in our online community as one means of measuring each leader's own team's level of engagement.
Interesting. Have you ever correlated that general survey with the trends in buzz?
We have worked with our HR analytics people to compare the most engaged, like the top 1,000 users in the community out of our 40,000 people. And we asked our HR analytics people to compare that with the overall associate population. And we found that there was about a, I think it was about a 3% greater overall engagement rate from the people who are highly engaged in the community are more engaged on average than those than the overall general associate population. I don't know if that made sense or not. The way I said that. Yeah, we did that a few years ago and had them verify that. And we're pleased to find that it, the most highly engaged community members exceeded the typical engagement level of the most highly engaged, you know, overall outside the community.
Interesting. That is cool. One of the things that I thought was so interesting, well, a couple of things. One is that I see when we measure engagement in the SOCM, we see we see engagement rates that are just much higher than the 99-1 rule or some of the other engagement rate benchmarks that are kind of get handed around. I'd be interested in your take on, like, I see communities as a really vital vehicle to increase the trust level, to then increase the engagement level. Do you kind of see that pattern as well? Or is that something that doesn't necessarily figure prominently for you?
Well, yeah, I've not been a fan of the 99-1 thing for a number of years because I felt like that perception always sold it very short of not only what the reality was, but what the what the capability was for it. And we expect more than that. You know, frankly, we expect our people to be engaged. Why would you not? And if we're talking about collaboration, for example, which we have major initiatives around changing the way we work right now and being able to measure that sort of behavior, then we've got to have higher expectations than 1% of the people out there contributing to things. That's not a collaborative network organization.
Yeah. And I think it does matter a lot by use case. So I do give, there are situations or use cases where you actually want that level of transparency. For example, like a help desk environment or something where you get a lot of repeated questions. You don't actually want the question and the answer again and again and again. You want people to come and find the answer that exists already because it's a pretty static answer. Yep. It doesn't change a lot. So it does depend on whether you're trying to collaborate or whether you're trying to disseminate some information that's pretty standard. The other thing that I found really interesting about the data, and we've collected this metric for a couple of years now, but I'd love your perspective on it, is this idea that communities and networks really empower people. And I see that as a really critical corollary or complementary piece alongside the engagement, meaning how you're empowering people will determine what kind of engagement you get from them.
Right.
But I'd love to hear your perspective on that.
Well, I think that's one of the biggest success stories from our experience here is because when we launched Buzz in 2010, Humana was very much hierarchical, top-down push approach in its communications, and there really was no way to interact with that. There were static intranet homepage articles you couldn't interact with, or all employee emails that come out, or whatnot. So one of the goals was to provide a means for people to find and have their voice in things. And through the years, that's certainly what we've seen happen. When there are policies or procedures or processes that need attention, in particular, then our community now has a place to go, and believe me, they don't hesitate to go there and to speak up about whatever it may be. And we see policies change quickly if something comes out that is really unfavorable to many. We constantly see processes improved and changed when people point out just from their own experience. Maybe their customers themselves, we have Humana insurance, and maybe something happened that was not a good customer experience for us. And so then we can advocate not just on behalf of somebody else who is a member, but from our own experience as well, and help bring about change there. So we see that a lot. There is an expectation now that when new benefits roll out, or annual changes in benefits, or changes to org structure, or any substantive thing happens that impacts the associate population directly, our communications people and our leaders know, okay, we need to pay attention to what's happening on Buzz with this. And they'll have people listening, and they'll ask me to listen, and we'll report. And when warranted, things change because of that. And it doesn't matter. The beauty of it all is that it doesn't matter where you are in the organization or what your title is. Your voice, simply because you voiced it there in that public forum, matters. And people pay attention to it.
That's amazing. It's like an innovation machine, right? Like
Yeah.
in some senses. But that also leads me to one of the things that I've been thinking a lot about lately, which is that is a pretty dramatic shift in the balance of power
Yes.
in terms of one of the things I see executives who kind of are used to having structural power really get very, confused about emergent or relational power, like the power of influence, and they don't understand why, like when they say something, it doesn't stand as is. Like that instant feedback is something that they're not used to. What was your experience like? I mean, you've also seen this network evolve, so I assume you've
Right.
kind of like seen it from the beginning all the way up to now. How did that process happen? Did you get a lot of reaction from leaders initially?
Well, Buzz launched far more bottom up than top down, which is not my recommended approach. But that's how it happened here. And so it could easily be dismissed in the early days. And there was some pushback, I remember, in the very first year, just on people even being able to talk about things non-business related out there. But fortunately, our top VP in IT, and that was the area that rolled it out, came to its defense and supported that type of conversation out there and kind of shut down an opposition attempt by some other leaders there, and I will forever be indebted to him for doing that. We've had, it's definitely evolved, a change in very top leadership with a new president coming in a couple years later who was very open to this and who set up his own focus groups out there with rotating memberships to ask associates questions about different things, his incorporating it into quarterly leader town halls that have 6,000 leaders invited to them as the way of interacting and fielding Q&A, set a different example from the top down, and that probably helped us more than anything in getting leader adoption, because now the CEO was doing it and others were more interested. And so that certainly had a positive impact. We still have occasionally those who say, well, somebody criticized my business area out there. Can you remove that post? No, we can't, or we won't, and here's why. And they get it when it's explained to them. And then we go on and we learn to have conversations that may be difficult but important to have, rather than just shutting down any kind of negative attention certain processes or whatever might get in conversation.
That's amazing. Just from my experience with a lot of organizations, that is a really tough transition to make for a lot of individuals, because it by necessity makes a lot of people uncomfortable. And sitting with that discomfort is not the first reaction people have or that people have.
Related to that, let me share one other story. This isn't about our internal community, but it reflects the same attitude from top leadership. Our chief consumer officer, Jody Bilney, has been with us for several years, and she has continuously emphasized a consumer-oriented mindset for the company. And so when our team, who also includes others who focus on external social and social listening and social intelligence and whatnot, from what we're seeing publicly about us, you know, we will regularly. We have weekly reports that get submitted to her and to hundreds of others. And when those concerns expressed externally on Twitter or Facebook or blogs or wherever are presented to them, the initial response of some is, oh, no, what can we do about that? And they're thinking removing comments, from Facebook or something. And her focus is, no, this is the fact that, there's something negative is there is not the issue. The problem that provoked that response, that bad customer service experience or that bad interaction in some way, is what provoked it. So that's where our focus needs to go in solving that, and not trying to control the conversation in ways that we can't really control anymore.
That's amazing. And that's great that it's kind of filtered out. And I think having that experience internally probably created more openness to having that conversation externally, if I had to guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But all of that leads me to kind of the final thing I want to chat about, which is, what's been the impact of all of this engagement? And there's a couple of ways you could think about this, which is, what's been the impact for individual associates? What's been the impact for the organization? What's the tactical impacts? What's the strategic impacts? You can kind of answer it however you like, but there's a lot of lenses on that.
Right. One of the things that I wanted to do earlier this year was kind of summarize like the first 9 years and answer that question, what has been the impact of Buzz on the organization? And I found that it fit in really three big categories. Once I began to think of the specifics and categorize them, those three categories were communication and engagement and processes. Communication, both in what we've already mentioned with individual associates having a voice and being able to talk about anything from anywhere at any time, and leaders being aware of that and caring about that. Mm-hmm. It's changed the push-down approach to one that expects to be a conversation about things. On the engagement side, it's given individuals the opportunity to rise up. I mean, we have people who have been leaders in the community who nobody would have anticipated. You know, mm-hmm. it's this person in this role from a remote location or working from home who most beyond that person's team had never heard of, but they shine in the community because they share great content or they answer a gazillion questions along the way for others, or they're incredibly positive and helpful, or they had their own great well-being success story that mm-hmm. they shared, you know, with before and after photos, and suddenly they're a rock star. Here internally, and part of that engagement is creating the ability for leaders to have those conversations, and so town halls have been incredibly popular. We tend to have one or two a day somewhere in the organization. Now, I forget the exact number, but well over 1,000 since we've been doing those. People just expect open Q&A time when leaders are talking about things now. And then in our processes, too, we've had idea challenges where business problems are presented and the community is used to solicit solutions to those business challenges and to discuss those, and then the business area sponsoring that can take it back and work with those and implement what they believe to be best. Certainly broken processes or suggested new innovative things have come about. So those are the big general buckets, I think, of communication, engagement, and processes where we've seen the most significant impact to date.
How does the overall culture feel differently? Because I imagine making that switch makes just the overall feel as an individual, the feeling of being part of that organization, different.
Well, it does. I mean, we have like 30% of our associates here are work at home people. Mm-hmm. Great risk of personal isolation there. But the work at home group on Buzz has been one of the busiest, most active, consistent groups that we've had for years out here. And people regularly tell us that that has made such an incredible difference to them. Mm-hmm. With our migration to a different platform here just a couple of weeks ago, there was one pocket of users who use this one particular software product that until it is updated here in a couple of weeks, their system accounts can't be changed in the way that's required for Office 365 to allow them into Buzz mm-hmm. Or Yammer. And so they've kind of been cut off from the community here for the last 2 weeks and will be for a couple more. And I got an email yesterday from one of them, great guy who's always been active in Buzz, and he sent me an email, and the subject heading was "Feeling Woozy." And what he said was, "Jeff, not having Buzz access is making me feel like I have the flu. Man, I really miss being able to connect through Buzz." And this is a manager who is just exemplary in how he uses it to publicly affirm and recognize, especially people under him and others that he works with. That's probably the best thing he does out there, is he's just incredibly generous with his praise, and he's missing being able to do that publicly. And I love seeing that expectation from him and from others.
That is amazing. And I've heard other stories of why platforms have gone down or been shut down or not accessible. And it is mm-hmm. one of the best ways to kind of understand the role of it in people's work lives. Mm-hmm. And it goes right. Missing. They notice it, which is amazing.
Yes.
And you're one of the vanguards, too, of part of the impact and the measurement pieces. You very early on took a crack at community ROI when mm-hmm. most people were not quite willing to do that yet. And I remember that case study from Connect from a few years ago, and
Right.
on that front too. So I don't want to keep you any longer, but I do want to congratulate you on that success, because it's so many organizations can't figure their way through this. And it sounds like you have navigated to a place that is transformational. Like, it has transformed the culture and the ability of people to feel like they're part of it.
And we still have a lot to go and are making a lot of plans for that. I mean, just a few months ago, there was a new office stood up in HR called the Office of Change Management. And we are joined at the hip in what we're doing, because their goals are exactly my goals, and in changing the way we work and in measuring that. And so we have some incredibly exciting stuff coming up down the road that I'm just really eager to dive into and partner with them on, because I think we mutually meet each other's needs here with what the community can provide and what they're seeking throughout the whole org.
That's fantastic. And one of the things that we're seeing, and you mentioned just briefly, is more integration with HR, for example. So one of the things that has happened with community programs over the years is they're still somewhat isolated, but organizations are depending on them more and more, and they're getting more integrated in lockstep with change management or HR. And so that really affirming as well. So congratulations, and I can't wait to see what you do next.
Me too.
Thanks for listening to another edition of Conversations with Community Managers from the Community Roundtable. We'll see you next time.